to Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast, where we discuss everything Voltron. And we'd love to see more and more fans embracing the latest show on Netflix, DreamWorks Animation's Voltron Legendary Defender. On today's show, we will be reviewing the third episode of Voltron Legendary Defender. It's called Return of the Gladiator. So I want to welcome my color commentator and co-host, Greg Tyler.
Hello, hello. Mark Morrell, our host extraordinaire. It's great to be back to talk with you about Voltron.
Okay, so Greg, we've had a pretty huge response to our last two episodes with our guests Neil Kaplan and Josh Keaton.
Yes, what a lot of fun it was to record those two.
Yeah, and thousands upon thousands of you listeners have been getting your Voltron Legendary Defender fix here at Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast. Since you've already seen all 11 episodes on Netflix and have read the first issue of Voltron Legendary Defender number one from Lion Forge Comics, right? Right. Everybody did it, right?
Is it out yet, Mark?
Yes.
It came out
on July 13th.
Oh, it came out on July 13th. Yes. we're recording this in advance of that date.
We're in a time warp. Come on.
Yes, let's do the time warp again. I caught that pop culture reference there, Mark.
Yes. Yes, anyway, we did.
Yeah.
So, you know, we can't wait to share more of this wonderful universe with all Voltron fans. So for today's podcast, we're going to continue reviewing Voltron Legendary Defender episodes in order. And we're now at episode 3, Return of the Gladiator. But before we go there, we have a couple of special guests we want to bring on first. Greg?
Yeah, these are some folks that Mark has had the privilege of speaking with twice, and this is my first time around. I am excited to speak with Joaquin Dos Santos and Laura Montgomery. This is great stuff.
All right, you guys are in for a real treat this time, because we've talked to these people a few times, and the third time is the charm for Greg.
It is. The third time is the first time.
Yes. You've heard them at WonderCon. We did interviews with them at WonderCon. It was special because we actually got video interviews with them as well. And then we were able to get interviews with them before the June 10th release of Voltron Legendary Defender. And now we get to talk to them after it's been released, just like we promised. So we want to introduce executive producers and showrunners for Voltron Legendary Defender, Lauren Montgomery and Joaquin Dos Santos.
Hey, guys.
How's it going?
Hey, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having us. It's real exciting to finally be able to talk about this thing now that it's out. We don't got to dodge around certain questions anymore.
That's right.
So we're thrilled to be here.
I'm thrilled to actually be part of this for a change. This is great. Thank you.
I still don't believe you're here.
So I'd like to introduce you to my co-host that you probably thought didn't exist. His name is Greg Tyler.
Yeah, I just appeared out of the ether just for tonight, and then I'll quietly disappear when this is over. Wonderful to speak with you both. We'll dive into the show here shortly, obviously, but I just wanted to say up front, wow, and thank you for this great new series. What a ride.
Oh, that's so awesome of you to say. We really appreciate it. And we're, like Lauren said earlier, we're just so excited to be able to kind of be on the other side of this thing and be able to talk about the show, you know, completely without, you know, holding back any spoilery secret stuff that we couldn't talk about before.
Yeah, and it's a huge vote of confidence for us to get, you know, the feedback from you guys, being that you're probably the biggest Voltron fans out there.
Yeah, you guys
if
are like the
if
nucleus.
You've given us the sign off, then we feel like we've probably done our jobs right.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, you've gotten 1,000 sign offs from us.
Yeah, indeed.
So I think we're going to give you the go ahead and just sign off on everything going forward too. Is that okay?
All right, we'll just go. We're just plowing ahead then.
I'm going to hold you to that.
Yeah.
Now you understand that the fans of this podcast and the fans of Voltron would not let you leave here today without assuring them that season 2 is being worked on and will be released at a date in the near future. So what can you tell us?
We can tell you that we are excited to be working on Voltron and excited to be talking about season one and how awesome it was to get it out there and have the masses, you know, hear the response from the masses. As far as, you know, officially talking about any sort of season two hullabaloo, mum's the word as far as we're concerned.
Okay.
Well played.
Yeah, it's like a chess match, isn't it?
It is. Just when we thought we were out of the we can't talk about it zone, where you put us right back in.
Sorry about that. Nobody would have forgiven me if I didn't ask.
That's all right.
What we would like to know is the response that you've gotten from Voltron Legendary Defender. How has this differed from any responses you got from the previous two shows you worked on, The Legend of Korra and The Last Airbender?
You know, it's crazy because Voltron kind of already had this built-in audience. So when Avatar, The Last Airbender came out, it was just a brand new project. And so people, when they looked at it, they just kind of had to judge it for what it was, which is it was a good show. And it was the first of its kind. In our case, we were remaking a show that was very near and dear to a lot of people's hearts. So, and we definitely had that fear of will the old fans like it? We had a feeling like the new fans would like it, but we just didn't know if the original fans would feel the same way. And it was really gratifying to us to find out that I think overall people were really accepting of it and really loving of it. There's still the few hardcore fans that, you know, don't like it because it's not exactly the original. But it's, you know, it's been really awesome just seeing the outpouring of support and appreciation for the show, and just the appreciation from people saying that it definitely feels like it was made by people who are fans of the show. Being that Joaquim and I are fans of the show, it definitely makes us feel good about what we've done, because that was our goal in the first place, was just to do right by Voltron.
Yeah, just to add to that a little bit, it's not a hugely different thing from the previous shows that we've been on, because one of the cornerstones that I think we all kind of hung our hats on was that, you know, both those shows were made for a pretty wide audience and had viewership that ranged from, you know, kids all the way to the grandparents and the family watching it and sort of sharing in the fandom of it. And we've been really excited by the fact that this show's kind of fallen into that same, at least from all the reactions that we've seen thus far, it's fallen into that same category where it's really open-ended in terms of the, you know, the age range of people that are watching and appreciating the show. So, you know, we see cool fan art from kids that are like 8 years old to people that are in their, you know, 50s. It's really cool.
Yeah, this show has really inspired a lot of artists and writers out there to do their own fan fiction and their own fan art, and it's amazing.
It's been really humbling and inspiring. You know, we see some art that we're like, wow, these people should be working on the show. They're awesome. They're fantastic.
They're better
artists
than we are.
Yeah, they're better at drawing the characters on model than we are, and we work on the show.
Yeah, I can tell you that at my workplace, I mean, I'm the resident Voltron geek, of course, but I've told a few people of varying ages about the new series, and they were open-minded enough to give it a try. Some of them had watched the original series, some had never heard of Voltron, and the reaction from everyone who has given it a try has been overwhelmingly positive. And that's really a testament to the talents and skills of you and your creative team. This is just amazing.
Oh, that's incredible. Well, thanks so much for just putting the word out there. We appreciate it.
Yeah, we can't, you know, say it enough, but it really does start with you guys, you know, being passionate about it and getting the word out there. And really, you guys kind of carried the Voltron torch through some pretty dark times. So we're excited that, you know, we're here and we're able to sort of like, you know, kind of deliver it to a new generation, and you guys are really just a huge part of it.
Thanks.
The cool part of this is that, you know, people are just now noticing the podcast, and they're, you know, hearing us interviewing people like Josh Keaton.
Yeah.
And the next one that people will see is Neil Kaplan.
Awesome.
So, and now you guys. And then after you guys, then we'll have Kimberly Brooks as well.
That's so cool.
That's
so
great.
They come and they see the Voltron Legendary Defender people coming to our podcast, and then they go back and they check out all the old stuff that we had done prior to this, and they didn't realize there was so much.
That's great. Yeah. I mean, if we can get you some reverse engineered viewership, we're happy to contribute to that as well.
I want to make another quick comment. I actually, I came late to the Legendary Defender party in the sense that on June 10th, when the show was released, I was in a car on my way to Walt Disney World with my family. And so I was about a week and a half behind and watching the show. But I will tell you that I was wearing the day after we got there, so the 11th, the day after Voltron hit Netflix, I was wearing the WonderCon t-shirt. Mark was kind enough to pick one up for me that had the V logo on it. And no series logo, just the V. And one of the guys working in one of the restaurant areas at the Magic Kingdom had never seen Voltron before, the Legendary Defender series, but recognized from the V that's what I was wearing, was something that from the new show.
Wow.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah, that's really cool. And, you know, yeah. I mean, it's tough because that V in particular is something, you know, branding-wise, you know, it didn't exist in the original. It's something that's new to Legendary Defender. So for somebody to have picked up on that cue, you know, it was a pretty subtle shirt in terms of you know, branding, and it's just exciting to hear that people recognize and picked up on that stuff so soon.
And the day after it came out. That's what's phenomenal about it.
Very cool.
I'd like to talk to you guys a little bit, review season one, if we could.
Great.
There's some things that happened in this that caught some people by surprise. I guess the first thing we would want to talk about is something we're going to be talking about in an episode review we're doing after you guys get off. And that's in Return of the Gladiator at the end of the episode. Do you guys remember that?
Absolutely. I hope we're talking about Pidge.
Yes. Yes, we are.
it's really a huge weight off of both Joachim and my shoulders to finally just have that out there. You know, the amount of questions that we had to field just about, you know, female involvement in our show. And obviously, we really liked the reveal. We thought it was a really cool moment, so we didn't want to spoil it by kind of throwing it out into the press, you know, right off the bat. But of course, it ended up with us kind of having to do this whole dance when people be like, "Where are the women?" We're like, "They're in there, we promise." But oh, it's so great that now it's out there, and just seeing the online response to Pidge and just the love for her is incredible. Because for me, from the original show, Pidge was the hardest character for me to get behind, just because, like, I didn't quite understand him. I didn't, like, the voice was a little hard to appreciate. Uh-huh. But, you know, he was still part of that team, so you wanted to be able to get behind him. So when we set out to make this show, that was, like, the very first thing that I started thinking about was, oh, my goodness, like, I could wrap my head around how to update everyone else, but Pidge, I was like, what are we going to do with Pidge? Well, what are we going to do with Pidge? So, you know, I looked at the original, and I was like, well, we could just make him a little kid. That's a little more appealing. And then I looked at what they'd done with Voltron Force, and they just kind of made him just a little techier. But I don't know, I still didn't really enjoy that character. So then in my head, I was like, well, Pidge was always kind of in this weird area where he kind of had a feminine haircut. He had his little headband. He had not the most masculine outfit, even. And,
right.
Well, why couldn't he just be a girl and yet still occupy exactly the same space that character needs to fill? And so that's what we ended up going with. In my opinion, it's a good thing, because I she's my favorite overall of all the characters now, which is something that I didn't expect to happen, because Pidge was kind of my least favorite in the original.
You're not alone. There's a lot of other people out there who have already said that Pidge is their favorite.
Yeah. And I think giving that level of complexity, you know, her sort of struggling with that secret, and it just gave a level of complexity to a character that I think otherwise could have easily been just washed over as that kind of a secondary, you know, B-level character.
Yeah, she could have easily just fallen into, like, and here's your tech geek, and that's what they do. They're the tech person. But she's got a whole other drive to her, where she's fearless, she's looking for her family, she's not going to give up for any reason, and it's part of what ends up making her the hero that she becomes.
Yeah, I mean, I'd argue that she has probably the strongest, you know, character arc in season one. She's got one of the biggest things to sort of drive towards.
Right.
And that carries on.
Right. So the thing that spurred this on was the fact that Shiro had, you know, gotten some of his memory back during that battle with the Robeast, and they were able to, you know, defeat the Robeast, and then things had calmed down a little bit, and they got a chance to talk to each other, and he told her what he knew.
Exactly. No, he'd been obviously involved with her brother and her father on the mission, so of course he knew the whole family and he knew who she was, so it was the best way to kind of have that information come out was through him.
But, you know, I gotta say, and I think it's been cool to kind of read fans picking up on this also, it was definitely our intention once, you know, her secret came out that she wasn't any different a character. Her gender didn't really dictate what type of character she was. They treated her exactly the same. She still, you know, serves the exact same purpose on the team. She's the same character.
And that was, the point we were kind of trying to make just in general in entertainment is that it's actually not that difficult to just have a female character. You don't have to change the story or change how the character acts to make the character female. Pidge literally occupies the exact same space that she occupied when she was masquerading as a boy, and then she's a girl, and literally nothing changes.
Yeah,
right.
I really liked in the later episodes how the different characters reacted to the news. I mean, some of them, many of them had, of course, figured it out, or, you know, it was something that Coran never picked up on, you know, Pidge being male. And then, of course, the only person who was shocked, of course, was Lance, probably because he had never thought to flirt with Pidge before.
Right.
But, I really liked the acceptance and this just sort of, okay, yeah, we get it. Let's go on. I love that.
And even the little thing of Coran kind of not even realizing, like, that's the thing that I love about Coran and Allura. And then, like, them being aliens, there's a lot of things that people just assume you would pick up on if you were human, but maybe they don't. Maybe Allura had never thought for a second that Pidge would be a girl until the mice told her. She was just like, right. This is what Earth boys look like, right. I assume. They all just look a little different. And, you know, and then Coran, just thinking, assuming she was a girl, he didn't think anything otherwise. So it's like, you never really know what way they're going
to
go.
It would be kind of funny to do a storyline specifically from Allura and Coran's POV, where they see the team as, like, vastly different than the way they're represented to the audience.
What a great idea.
Well, one of the things that really drove home the fact that Allura was an alien was in one of the later episodes where we saw her change.
Yeah.
That was a big surprise.
Yeah, and that was one of those things that, again, in the original show, her being an alien was not really, like, a thing. She didn't really do anything different from any of the humans.
They didn't take advantage of the fact that she was an alien.
Yeah, so we wanted to have a little more fun with it. Obviously, we changed her look up a little bit, but then also, like, what are they capable of doing? What can she and Coran do that other people can't? And so we've seen that Allura has this amazing connection with the castle, but then she also has this extra ability where they can kind of chameleon themselves a little bit. And so that was just kind of a fun thing. It also helped us to just get Allura into the action without having to, I guess, find a way for her to be this amazing, like, martial artist that really didn't fit into her story.
Yeah,
right.
She has this ability that she can kind of grow and just become, like, a more strong human being, then she too can get into that action.
It's funny, you know, because I think when we were kind of breaking that story, you know, one of the sort of fallbacks was to just, hey, she does cool Altaian martial arts and she just knows how to do all that stuff. And that was actually sort of this weird trope that we didn't want to go down where she does, you know, the superhero landing pose every 5 seconds and whoops everybody's right. For no reason. So I think this was kind of a cool twist on like Lauren said, getting her into the action and making her sort of a viable contender to take on the Gaara.
Yeah, I mean, just the fact that she is essentially a princess of a planet that we don't really know what they were about, but it seemed like they were kind of a peace-loving planet until they were attacked by Zarkon. So, it just didn't make a ton of sense for her to be kind of that thing that Joachim and I have come to know is a little bit cliche is of this woman who just can kick all of the guys' butts, and that's why it's okay for her to be in the action show, because she's better than everyone. And we just didn't really want to do that. We didn't want to rob Allura of her arc and her earning her hero status just to make her like more acceptable in the action environment.
Right.
Right. Makes sense.
So one of the things that a lot of the fans had questions about was we had just reviewed Some Assembly Required last episode, and they were wondering if Allura was actually the gladiator on the training deck.
No.
No, and that's actually a funny thing because there was a version
originally
of the script
she was.
Where she was. Yeah. She was a training gladiator. And then I just not felt comfortable with it because, again, it felt a little cliche.
It was the trope of, like, this gladiator kicked all their butts and then takes off the helmet. Oh, and it's Allura, and she's, like, a cool martial artist, and, like...
it's been done.
Yeah.
And it just didn't really fit her character for us at that moment. So we made a point to take that out of the story.
Okay. That's
but
cool.
Guarantee you, you know, Lauren sort of alluded to it before. She has a character arc, and she will absolutely... I mean, she already has, without a doubt, but she will continue to rise to the occasion and, you know, evolve. And, you know, there may come a time when she's, you know...
Yeah.
Genuinely able to do, you know, cool martial arts, cool moves.
Yeah, she needs to learn it now, but she didn't need to learn it up until this point.
That's right.
She lived a fairly peaceful life that didn't really require a ton of self-defense and martial arts. So
right.
it's everything that we do, we just try to make sure that it actually is motivated and works within our story.
And I just want to say, Kimberly Brooks is doing an awesome job as Allura.
Yeah, she is great. She's wonderful.
Yeah,
we're huge fans.
Now, was that the voice that she used at her audition?
I don't believe
I think her audition initially, she went straight forward with an American accent, and then we asked if she could put the British accent on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, honestly, I'm pretty fuzzy on
okay.
the of our audition process.
Because
it's a whirlwind. It's,
yeah.
it's a whole thing.
We listen to a lot of voices. We don't remember exactly what everyone did, but so obviously something she did really caught our attention. And then we just wanted to give Allura that little bit of, like, extra regal sense. And so, yeah, we'd asked for the accent. And we were told that, obviously, Kimberly is an incredibly talented and experienced voice actress. And so she can do pretty much anything you ask her to. She was able to do the accent no problem. So
yeah.
I wanted to sort of segue from Allura into the show's sci-fi flavor in general. Far more than Voltron. I mean, I'm a sci-fi geek in general. I mean, going back to Fritz Lang's Metropolis from 1928, and I don't want to give you a full biography. The bottom line is, I love sci-fi, and
yeah.
One thing that I found so refreshing about this series is the sci-fi twist. Not just with Allura with her chameleon-like capabilities and all that, but the Balmera really spoke to me. Where you've got this planet that's not a planet. I really enjoy, you know, if we're out there defending the universe, it's neat to see how awesomely different the universe is from Earth.
Cannot tell you how appreciative of we are that you took notice of that. I mean, again, you know, sort of when we're sitting in with Tim and all the writers and breaking stories, oftentimes it sort of starts out as like a rough outline where, hey, they go to Planet X, or they, you know, we sort of like pause the session and we say, like, hey, what can we do to make this unique and different and separate itself from a lot of the other sort of, you know, just sort of fallback tropey kind of cliche stuff. And I think the Balmera was one of those examples. It's cool that the universe isn't just made of, you know, little green people and those represent our aliens, that there's these giant celestial beings out there that other things live on.
Yeah.
Keep trying to push the envelope that way, so hopefully we can continue to do that.
Great. Love it.
And one thing I wanted to know was, at the beginning of every episode, it shows the lions, you know, coming out of their natural habitats.
Yeah.
But we never see that in the show itself. Was that something you had done as a title sequence beforehand, or is it going to come, you know, evident later?
Well, I mean, we saw the green lion on the sort of jungly planet.
I mean, the thing is, we knew that ultimately this was going to be a kind of a space road show, and that our paladins were going to basically be based out of the castle. And within the castle, we didn't have like a forest room and a water room. So we knew that we wouldn't be able to do that portion of the transformation sequence every time. And that's something that I think a lot of people really loved, is like seeing the yellow line come out of like the desert area, right, and the green line coming out of the forest. And we knew that we weren't going to be able to have that every time. So having the main title kind of show that was a little bit of our homage to that original transformation sequence. So we're never going to actually see them like housed in a, like their
like
nature
their own,
area.
Yeah.
But you will definitely see that each of these lions has a tie to its certain element. And that'll be visible in the show.
That's great.
To Lauren's point on that, we're trying to do that in a unique way where it's not just, you know, oh, the green one, the plant one, because he's green. You know, we're trying to tie the body of the overall story. So it makes sense. Like the situation really makes sense. It's not just a plant one because it's green.
Right. Okay, so on the opposite side, we have Hagar and Zarkon.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have these druids that helps Hagar with the quintessence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, one very important plot point that happened near the end was where Keith had gotten exposed to quintessence in its refined form.
Yeah.
And he started to get hurt. And then he got touched by quintessence in its unrefined form, and it healed him.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea here being that quintessence could be for both good and for evil.
I think that's the idea, is that the Galra have figured out a way to manipulate this, you know, sort of ultimate form of energy to be kind of an offensive bad thing.
Yeah,
and
they've just found ways to kind of use it to their own
devices. Yeah, I think, you know, and Hagar, you know, we really try to ride the line between that fantastical magical element and the sci-fi science element.
Right.
So we're not really sure what dark arts and what sort of alchemy and magic that Hagar and the druids are doing on it, but it's obviously having really, really negative effects on the quintessence.
Right.
And that, as far as the universe is concerned, has much bigger ramifications sort of moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Hagar had now figured out a way to pull the quintessence from a planet in mere minutes, where it would have taken them years before.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a huge step. The Komar is like a huge deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it looks much cooler than a plunger might.
So. But basically the same function.
So. Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to say thank you, thank you, thank you for bringing Voltron back in a way that is even bigger than we had ever imagined.
No problem. And thank you guys for, you know, just supporting it so much and being such huge fans. And
yeah, you know, like I said, keeping it alive during the lean times, because, you know, hopefully this is you know, this show coming out and everybody in the whole fandom sort of being able to take part in it has made it all worth it, because honestly, I, you know, I don't know how you guys did it for those dark times. There was a good period of time where there was no Voltron, and you guys really carried the torch. So we can't tell you how much we appreciate it.
And I can tell you for certain that tons of people have come to the podcast way more than there was before there was a brand new show out.
Oh, great!
That's awesome to hear.
Yeah, it wasn't just our charming personalities.
That's right.
Thank you, both of you. This has been a real treat. I'm glad that we finally had a chance to chat.
As well, I'm still skeptical as to whether it's really you, but
yeah, I am just a ventriloquist dummy. I'm actually sitting on Mark's knee right now,
and I'm throwing my voice.
That's right.
Great, guys.
Thanks very much.
So, Greg, that was really great to have Lauren and Joaquin going over the first season with us. You know, it's sort of like having DVD commentary as you're watching a movie or TV series, isn't it?
Oh, it is. I love that stuff. Whenever I watch old school Doctor Who on DVD, I always have the commentary on. It's so much fun, and what a blast it was to hear from them today.
I mean, it was great to be able to go over some of the major plot points of the first season, and these little tidbits of information woven into the podcast here now, you know, like when we found out the answer to that question about whether Allura was the gladiator in some assembly required or not, that they actually had thought of having her as the Gladiator first and then decided not to do it.
I'm glad they decided not to, but yeah, isn't that interesting? A lot of people thought maybe she was the Gladiator because of that, you know, her just sort of popping up as the Gladiator fell in the episode. But to get a glimpse into the creative process there was really cool.
Yeah, and how, you know, they developed Pidge and how they developed Allura and, you know, this whole thing about Quintessence and everything. I mean, man, I could have talked to them all day.
Yeah, me too. I think I love talking with our with the voice actors that we've spoken with so far and will be speaking with in the future. But I also really enjoy, you know, talking with the world builders, the folks who create the settings and the stories that our favorite characters, you know, interact in. This has been a real treat.
Yeah, and the you know, how they had said how different it was this time around as compared to when they did The Legend of Korra and Avatar The Last Airbender.
Yep, good stuff. I'm still blown away by this show. And again, and I am saying this as someone who loves Voltron Force. And I even like Voltron the Third Dimension, which a lot of people think, you know, a little less highly of. But having loved all of the series to this point, this show has really blown me away. And it's just such an exciting time to be a Voltron fan, whether you're just coming into the franchise or you've been around since, you know, days of long ago when Golion and Dairugger first found their translated ways onto our screens. And it's just such a treat to talk with Joaquin and Lauren about this new chapter.
Form Voltron!
Okay, Greg, let's start off by reviewing Return of the Gladiator.
Okay. First of all, before we dive into the plot, I wanted to touch on the title. You know, the obvious Return of the Gladiator reference is to the creature that shows up in this episode where, you know, this as we'll get into this review, this creature is someone from Shiro's past. And so it has returned to unleash, you know, a second wave of terror in the lives of Shiro and his friends. But there's another interpretation of the title, and that's the return of Shiro. You know, Shiro has not had the best recall when it comes to his time away from Earth when he was in captivity. And this episode not only has a return of some of his memories, but a return of his specific memories of and his prowess in combat when he was in captivity. So I like the fact that the title has several layers of meaning.
Yeah, I mean, he was called the champion.
Right.
But he was a champion gladiator.
Right.
So that's an important thing to think about in this because, you know, a lot of these episode titles, when you see them for the first time, sometimes it seems obvious, but sometimes it does have a double meaning.
Right.
Okay, so we start off Return of the Gladiator, Episode 3, on Emperor Zarkon's base ship. Hagar and her druids are watching over Zarkon, being rejuvenated by the Quintessence. It's almost like he's taking a bath in it. There's so much purple.
Yeah, that visual is actually a little familiar, isn't it?
Yeah, it reminded me of Lotor in Voltron Force.
Yes, the Hagarium.
Yeah. So Hagar tells him, "Sire, the beast is almost to Arrhys." And as Zarkon stands up, he says, "This Quintessence gives me so much power. I could fight the paladins myself."
If only we had Neil Kaplan here right now to repeat that line. But yes.
Yeah. So Hagar replies, "There's no need. My creature will destroy them and capture the Voltron Lions for you. Then the most powerful weapon in the universe will be ours." And as we see the ship holding the beast hurtling through space towards Arrhys. Now on Arrhys, Shiro says, "Great job training today, guys. We're really getting the hang of Voltron." So from some assembly required, they've gone right back to going back to training, and they're doing a much better job of it now.
Yep. Practice makes perfect.
Yeah. And Lance says, "Seriously, how far do you think my lion kicked that broken alien ship? Must have been like a mile." And Keith says, "Yeah, that'll come in handy when the Galra challenges Voltron to a soccer match." But Lance replies, hey, I did something cool and you can't handle it. I get it. And Keith retorts, well, your kick ruined our balance. We fell. And Lance exclaims, well, that falling part was Hunk's fault. Well, Hunk tries to defend himself. He just says, hey. But his helmet, did you notice? His helmet is still too small for him. Every time he tries to take it off, it kind of pops off.
Yeah, that's pretty good stuff. You'd think that with all the fancy technology they have, they'd come up with something to stretch that helmet a bit.
But Shiro comes in and interrupts. All right, save your energy for fighting Zarkon. Karan comes in. Hello, guys. How was the Voltron workout? Shiro says, we're getting there. Are you and Allura almost done fixing the castle so we can leave this planet? I feel like we're sitting ducks here on Eris. The ducks is very important here.
Yes.
Because Karan answers, just about. In the meantime, to get your minds off those duck seats you're worried about, I made you guys an authentic ancient paladin lunch. Well, he opens a container to expose a green glob with yellow golf ball size appendages stuck to it. They all look at it in disgust.
Yeah, pretty disgusting.
Yeah, it didn't look very appealing.
Yeah, I've seen better looking Klingon food.
Ah, yeah. Or how about Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom?
Ah, the chilled monkey brains, yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so Hunk says, Karan, you just got me hooked on that goo, and now you're switching it up? And Karan exclaims, this is packed with nutrients. Well, Hunk sniffs it and says, oh, it smells disgusting. Karan says, I know, that's how you know it's healthy.
Well, I guess some things are universal, aren't they?
Yes. Yes, if it smells bad, it must be good for you.
Yes.
So Hunk says, Karan, we're on a planet now with fresh herbs, spices, and whatever this thing is. He's holding up a plant that he picked.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, a tuber? He's not sure what to call it, but it looks like a tuber to him. So now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to head back to the kitchen and spice things up. So a little later on, we're going to get to see what Hunk comes up with.
Right.
So Shiro asks, where's Pidge? As Karan starts to dig into the meal, he says, well, he's probably checking on those prisoners we rescued from Zarkon. They'll all be waking soon in the infirmary.
Yeah, and this really was kind of a big thing. You know, at the end of the first episode, you saw them all leave in that escape pod. And I had sort of thought that that would be the last we'd see of them, as if they'd just gone into a little wormhole or something and gone back home. But it's interesting to get some follow-on here.
Yep. Well, Shiro gets up to go, but Karan sticks a spoonful of the disgusting stuff in front of Shiro's face and says, open the hatch. Food lion coming in. He imitates an airplane flying towards Shiro's mouth. That's also a universal thing, apparently, too.
Yeah, seemingly. Open the hatch and flying in an airplane, yes.
The funny thing is there's a, I think there's a bunch of stores in the United States somewhere called Food Lion.
Yes, that's true. I've been to a couple of those.
Okay. Well, Shiro groans and says, no, just no. And you can tell he's not going to have any part of that.
I have to wonder, with all the exotic alien stuff here on the castle ship, I have to wonder, what does the bathroom aboard this thing look like?
Oh, yeah, if they're always eating the same green goo.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks for making me think about that.
I was thinking of the three seashells from Demolition Man or something, but anyway, let's go.
Oh, I can only imagine. Well, in the infirmary, Pidge is sitting down in front of some of the replenishment tubes, waiting for the rescued prisoners to wake up. Shiro walks in and says, you're as anxious as me. Now, what do you think he means by that?
I think they both have things that they want to know and maybe don't want to know that these prisoners are aware of. You know, I mean, Pidge is looking for signs of what happened to his family, and Shiro wants to know but doesn't want to know what happened when he was in captivity.
Right. I think he wants to know answers as to why they're calling him the champion. You know, what happened during that time when he was held in captivity and all that kind of stuff. And And these people know some things.
Right.
And so he's not as anxious about Pidge's parents, but he's still concerned about Pidge's family.
Sure.
So Pidge says with certainty, these aliens we saved know something about my family. They have to. Shiro says, I hope so. So Pidge says, they recognized you, didn't they? They called you champion. What does that even mean? And Shiro thinks and says, I don't know. I can't remember very much from that time. But the way those guys looked at me when we freed them, I don't know if I want to find out.
Right.
So that's another thing. When we go back to when Josh Keaton was talking about his own headcanon,
mm-hmm.
he had thought about, you know, what happens if you did some bad things as this champion? You know, maybe I don't want to find out about that.
Right.
So with that, one of the chambers starts opening and the outside barrier slowly disappears. Pidge, in anticipation, watches to see what happens. The alien who had called Shiro the champion previously is awake and sighs. Meanwhile, Hunk puts food on the table that looks way better than what Karan had served previously. And Keith and Lance go bonkers and eat it right up. Allura walks in and says to Karan, they like the paladin lunch. And Karan says, I don't want to talk about it. Well, with excitement, she says, I just got the final Nebulon booster working. We should be able to leave planet Eris tomorrow and take the fight to Zarkon. Well, with those words, alarms start blaring everywhere. Everyone looks up. Allura punches up a monitor and sees that a small intruder is approaching the castle from outside. Keith says, what is that? Allura says, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's a local illusion. Well, they see the little guy holding a knife and skirting across the ground to take cover on the other side. Allura says, he's approaching the castle. It yells and it waves its knife back and forth and runs across the other side again, creeping closer to the castle. Hunk thinks it's cute and says, aw. Lance agrees. It doesn't look too dangerous. Keith says, you never know, and gets his Bayard ready. Well, yeah. Allura reacted to that right away. She doesn't want to get violent. She says, no. Altaians believe in peace first. Let's go welcome them. Hunk says, that's adorable, and follows Allura out. Lance says, hey, maybe we can knit him a little sweater.
Nice.
I just never picked Lance for being the sweater knitting type.
No, definitely not.
But Keith says, I'm not taking any chances. As the doors open, the little guy hides behind a rock and bushes. Allura comes up to where he's hiding and says, greetings, we know you're there. No harm will come to you. The little guy jumps out and shows his knife. Hunk still says, aw.
It's a cute little thing with a letter opener.
Yeah. Well, before anyone can move, Keith gets in between and says, wait, he could be dangerous. Drop your weapon. The little guy says, no one takes Klyzap's weapon. So now we can call him Klyzap. We know his name.
Yep.
Well, Allura tells Keith to put his Bayard away. Please, kind sir, accept my most humble apologies. Well, Klyzap seems surprised at her kindness and says, I am Klyzap, bravest of our warriors. Our village is over Gazrael Hill. I come seeking answers as to why the Lion Goddess is angered with her followers. Karan asks, followers? Hunk asks, Lion Goddess? Klyzap points to a rock wall that has the drawing of a goddess with a lion head and says, the one the ancients spoke of. Allura asks him, well, what makes you think she's angered? Klyzap says, destruction is everywhere. In the past few suns, fire has rained from the heavens, and a giant has danced in the sky. Who do you think that is?
I don't know. No, that would be Voltron.
And when they say the past few suns, that's just over the past few days. So this is really soon after some assembly required.
Right. I really like that this show... You know, it's not just that there's a story arc that continues over several episodes. It's that the story arc is kind of compressed. You know, the time frame, I would say, of all the episodes to this point has been pretty short.
Yeah, when we used to watch the old series, you could never tell just how long it had been in between episodes. You know, it could have been months, could have been years. You never knew.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't a strong, you know, the sense of continuity of an overarching story was not there to the degree that it is here. I mean, you know, each episode could take place hours, days, weeks, or months after the previous episode in most cases.
Yeah, so this is sort of like right away back to back here.
Right.
Hunk whispers to Lance, "I think he's talking about Voltron." Lance says out loud, "Yeah, I got that." Allura assures Klyza, "You have not angered the Lion Goddess." He answers, "How can you be certain?" "Because I am Allura, and this is my castle." Klyza gasps, "Lion Goddess," and he kneels down in front of her. Allura says, "Please, bravest warrior, take us to your village so that we may meet our neighbors." Keith says, and this is important, "What about our mission to get off this planet and fight Zarkon? Because I think he's quite surprised that Allura is trying to get to know the locals when she's been saying nothing but how they need to prepare to face Zarkon and everything since they arrived on this planet."
Yeah, and I have to say that in general, up to this point and beyond, I like that the writers aren't afraid to allow each character to speak his or her mind. You know what I mean?
Right.
They're not always a cohesive unit where they're always thinking the same thing at the same time. And I like the difference of opinions here.
Right. So Allura tells him, "Part of the Paladin's mission is to spread peace and diplomacy. Aris has been our host for 10,000 years. These people deserve our thanks." And that's a really good point.
Sure.
So back in the castle, all the people in the Replenishers have awakened and are sitting on the stairs with blankets on, and Pidge and Shiro giving them liquid refreshments. Pidge says, "So how long were you held captive by Zarkon?" The one who called Shiro the champion seems to be the only spokesperson for the group, says, "Some for years, decades maybe, it's hard to tell, time becomes a blur." Pidge says, "Then you must have been there when my dad and brother arrived, Sam and Matt Holt?" He says, "I never knew their names, but I certainly remember the other two Earthlings that arrived with Champion." Well, Shiro says, "Champion, why do you keep calling me that?" And he says, "You really don't remember. Unbelievable. You were a legendary gladiator, undefeated in the ring. You defeated an infamous Galra gladiator known as Myzax. That was the day you earned the name Champion. I was there, as was the young Earthling." Well, at this point, we see a flashback to a stadium of sorts with lots of people watching and cheering.
Right.
And he continues his story. "We were all prisoners, forced to fight for the entertainment of Zarkon. That day we were set to fight Myzax, a vile beast many thought could never be defeated. They show the prisoners lined up to face the mighty beast, including Matt, in front of Shiro."
Right.
The beast is giant in stature, holding a large staff in his right hand with a purple energy ball at the top of the staff.
And what a cool-looking weapon. I love that it's got that sci-fi alien twist going on there. It's not just a club.
Yeah, and he can throw the energy ball anywhere he chooses, and the ball will return to the top of his staff.
Yeah, very cool.
So he continues, "Slaughter awaited us all. This Matt was the first of us sent to fight, but fate had other plans. A guard appeared to get the next prisoner and pointed his sword at Matt. Shiro surges forward and grabs the guard's sword and slashes at Matt, injuring him and knocking him to the ground. He continues, "You were so thirsty for blood, you injured your fellow Earthling." Well, Pidge looks at Shiro and angrily asks, "You attacked my brother? Why?" Shiro says, "No, it can't be true." The prisoner says, "I was there. We all were." Pidge asks him, "After my brother was injured, where was he taken?" And he says, "I know not."
I have to say that I really like the shock that Shiro has. It's not just, I can't believe I would do this. You know, knowing that he's a person of good moral character, he wouldn't do this normally. But given that he was gone for a year and he doesn't fully remember what happened during that year, there's a sense of horror that, well, maybe I could have, you know?
Right. So Shiro says, I don't believe it. There's got to be more to the story. I couldn't have hurt my friend. Wait, that ship we were held captive on crash-landed on this planet. They'll have logs of prisoners, some information. And he starts to leave. Pidge runs after him. I'm coming with you. In the Erusian village, festive music is playing. People are laughing. Hugs are exchanged. The king of the Erusians walks up to Allura and says, O lion goddess, I, king of the Erusians, formally beg your forgiveness. Please have mercy on us and accept our traditional dance of apology as atonement for our wrongdoings. What do you think they did? They think they did wrong?
I don't know, but I would think that if you were a society seeing what could only be just about the most terrifying thing you could possibly see in your history happening right over your eyes over the, you know, over the course of a few days, and you had some beliefs that these were supreme beings, they probably have no clue what they might have done wrong.
I'm trying to figure out what it is exactly that they think they're doing.
Maybe they think they're too good at dancing.
Okay. Well, he claps, and another Erusian comes to the forefront and gets set to dance in front of Allura. The king says, commence dance of apology. All the Erusians cheer, and drums begin to play. The Erusian dances. Allura interrupts the whole thing. Please, there's no need for this. The king says, Muntau, halt. The goddess has refused the apology. Start the sacrificial fire.
Jeez.
So a large bonfire erupts. The Erusians scream, and the king declares, we must throw ourselves in.
Oh, dear.
Allura screams, no! No sacrifices! Her head is surrounded by lights as she says this, with sound effects for the blinking of the lights.
I love those anime-isms.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
So the king says, so we may proceed with the dance? As he says this, you see two Erusians in the background near the fire, holding another Erusian tied to a pole, ready to put him in the fire. He seems honored to be sacrificing himself. Did you get all that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Allura says, that's a better alternative, the dance, of course. The king claps, the music and the dancing resume, and no one is buried alive. That's always a good thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
At the end of the dance, they all bow before Allura, and she says, oh my. And then she says, please, please rise. Thank you for that. But I am not a great being worthy of your worship. I accidentally put you all in danger. It is I who should be apologizing to you. I am Princess Allura, and these are the Voltron Paladins. Although we originally came from different worlds and have very, very, very different traditions, we wish to live alongside you as friends.
Until the castle leaves tomorrow.
Exactly. I mean, you say these kind of things like, oh, we're so thankful that you're here with us. We've been here for the 10,000 years and we haven't gotten to know you yet. Oh, but by the way, we're leaving.
Yeah, exactly. I also think it's funny that, not funny, but a little odd that the Erusians didn't insist that Allura do a dance of apology or have the paladins sacrifice themselves in a fire.
Well, the king is still a little bit confused. He stands up and says, but the mighty robotic angel, has it not come to destroy us because of our immoral ways? There he goes again, talking about their immoral ways.
Right.
Allura says, Voltron? No. In fact, that mighty robot is here to protect you. Let it be known that Voltron will protect every innocent being throughout the universe. So a handful of Arusians have heard her declaration.
Yeah, and things are looking up.
The Arusians cheer, and there's lots and lots of hugging. One of them even jumps up on Keith, and Keith gasps and says, "I don't usually hug strangers, but, man, you are cuddly." The Arusian says in a deep, deep male voice, "Thank you."
I love that. And I think I just figured out what they did that would have made the lion goddess so angry. I bet these guys are Power Rangers fans.
Oh, boy.
Sorry.
No, I don't think so. All right. On another part of Aris, Shiro and Pidge find the crashed Galra ship. As they approach what could be the bridge, Pidge says, "This looks like the master control board, but there's no power." Shiro says, "All you need is power?" Pidge says, "Yeah, but one that's compatible with Galra tech." So Shiro looks at his right hand, activates it, it turns purple, and he touches the board, which powers up. Pidge watches this happen and says, "Whoa, I can't believe you got this to work." Pidge looks at the hologram from his arm and presses a few buttons. He says, "My dad's and Matt's whereabouts must be logged in here somewhere." Data starts to appear on the master board. "Once I download this information, I'll find some way to decode it back at the castle."
One thing to point out is that, as you did, Shiro's cybernetic hand glows purple. And yes, that purple is very often shown in shows like this one to represent evil, but it also very specifically is used to represent the quintessence that seems to be fueling Zarkon in some way. It almost makes me wonder if this arm might have some tainted quintessence in it or something.
Yeah, it's almost like the blue and the gray in the Civil War. You know, one team always wore blue and always had blue stuff, and the other team always had gray stuff. Well,
right.
In this one, anytime you see purple, that's probably Galra.
Yeah.
Okay, so Shiro hears a loud rumble, looks up at the sky and says, "What?" And sees a ship entering the atmosphere. He says, "Oh, no." Pidge, still working on the download, says, "What is it?" Shiro says, "Something just entered the atmosphere. I'm not sure what it is, but it's big, it's Galra, and it's coming right for us. We gotta go." He starts to pull his hand away from the board. Pidge grabs it quick and holds it down, saying, "Shiro, don't move. I'm only 15% done, and I'm not going anywhere."
That's dedication, isn't it?
Yeah.
Perhaps a little foolishness.
Yeah, a little bit, because... Yeah, because, I mean, in that instant, they could have been killed if they had waited longer.
Yep.
Well, Shiro sweats it out for a few more moments, looks up at the Galra ship heading right towards them fast, then quickly grabs Pidge, says, "I'm sorry," and flies both of them out of the damaged ship. When I say flies them out, they've got the suits that have the thrusters on them, you know?
Right.
They can't fly for long periods, but they can fly for short bursts.
Yep.
As this is happening, Pidge yells, "No!" And as they're flying away, Shiro gets the others on the comm and says, "Team, come in. We need backup."
I do want to point out real quick that these flight suits have those jet packs and all that stuff. It is a bit reminiscent of Voltron the Third Dimension. Their flight suits also had rocket nozzles or whatever that let them fly around for short distances too. So that's pretty cool.
Okay. Allura, who's still with the Arusians in her village, hears this and says, "Shiro?" Shiro says, "Where is everyone?" Keith doesn't have his helmet on, so he asks Allura, "What's going on?" All of a sudden, they feel rumbling and they look up to see the ship approaching. Keith says, "Oh no, we got to get to our lions." Allura tells all the scared Arusians, "Everyone get inside and stay down." Hunk is running with them and says, "I'm on it." Well, Keith grabs him and says, "Not you." As Shiro touches down outside the damaged Galra ship, Pidge says, "No, Shiro, let me go. My father." They look up, and the Galra ship in the air is about to hit their location. Shiro tells Pidge to run, and the ship hits the damaged ship, obliterating it and everything in the area. The blast sends Pidge and Shiro flying. There's a lot of dust and debris, and when it all settles, we see black and green lions both hovering over Shiro and Pidge.
Is that cool or what?
That was totally cool.
Yeah, and I think unexpected too. I mean, certainly unexpected. I mean, you know, we've seen that these lions can act on their own to a point, but to the point where they actually launch from their bays and get there in the nick of time, they must have anticipated something going on. There must be a connection with the pilots. This is cool stuff.
They must have felt that Galra ship coming.
Yeah.
So Shiro says, our lions just saved us. Pidge says, I didn't know they could do that.
Yeah.
Well, Pidge turns around, sees something big behind them, and says, Shiro, the massive ship behind them opens up and exposes the armored robe beast we had seen in the last episode that Hagar was preparing for battle. Its eye looks down and identifies the champion. Shiro tells Pidge, get in your lion. The robe beast charges up his energy ball on the staff in his right hand. He fires it in their direction, and both Black Lion and Green Lion, with their pilots in their cockpits, are able to dodge the ball at the last second. It sends a second blast towards Green Lion that barely misses again. On the third blast, Green Lion tries to blast back at the energy ball, but the ball is too strong for Pidge's blast and knocks Green Lion on his back, with Pidge groaning.
I should point out that Shiro at this point has no clue that this monster may have a link to his past.
Right. Right. And Pidge hears the footsteps of the robe beast approaching. So as the robe beast runs towards Pidge, Black Lion pounces on top of the head of the robe beast, but the robe beast is able to throw Black Lion down. So with both Black and Green Lions on the ground, Red Lion comes in and sends blasters at the robe beast. Keith says, lay down some covering fire so they can get out of there. So Red Lion's got the mouth blaster and Blue Lion uses the tail blaster. Lance says, I'm on it. Hunk comes running in on Yellow Lion and says, check this out. Battle Lion headbutt. And crashes into the robe beast, knocking it over.
This is not just funny because it's, well, genuinely funny, but it also kind of goes back to previous Voltron series where, you know, the lion pilots would, you know, yell out the name of the weapon they were about to use or the kind of attack they were about to do. And you don't get that very often here in this series. So it's fun to hear that. And of course, for it to be funny.
Yeah. And it's the first time he made it up anyway. So,
right.
So Keith says to Shiro and Pidge, you guys okay down there? Shiro answers, still alive for now. Well, all five lions then form a line in the sky in front of the robe beast, who's back up again. The split screen returns.
Yes.
Hunk on the right starts by asking, are the Galra behind this? Shiro in the middle says, I think so, but I've never seen anything like it. Lance, on the left, asks, so what's the plan? Shoot at it with everything we've got? Take out its weapon? Call it names? As Keith appears in the top left of the screen, and Pidge in the top right, Shiro says, if we want to take this monster down, there's only one way to do it.
Run like heck. No, just kidding.
No. So the lions all roar, and their colors glow as they head up into the sky. Shiro says, form Voltron. Now, did you notice whenever those colors are surrounding the lions as they go up, that Shiro's isn't black, it's purple.
Yes, it is. Yeah, I was about to point that out myself.
I think based on what we've seen towards the 11th episode,
mm-hmm.
I think we know why.
Maybe.
So they form Voltron and they land in front of the robe beast.
In cool fashion, of course.
Oh, yeah. Shiro says, remember, we are one unit fighting with one goal. As the robe beast powers up another energy ball, Voltron leaves his feet and flies towards it. The robe beast fires the ball and Voltron dodges it. Then Red Lion, with Keith screaming, comes in hard to deliver a punch, which is blocked by the right hand of the Rope Beast. I thought for sure that this was going to be like a really powerful move coming at him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, Pidge then lands a hard left uppercut, slamming the Rope Beast back off balance.
And I got to say, I love the angles that we see of the pilots as they're doing these punches. I mean, very intense, the angles and the energy in the pilots' faces. It seems more visceral than in previous shows where they might just say, you know, lion head attack or something like this. When you see them physically, their faces, you know, they're into what they're doing. It makes the battle seem much more intense.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, you know, based on what we had seen from the original series and everything, just there were a lot of times in fight scenes, I didn't know what happened, you know, after like two or three hits. What really happened there? I didn't catch all that.
Right.
But in these things, I'm able to see every hit, you know, yes, pretty clearly.
Yeah, the cause effect is very clear.
So, you know, Pidge had the uppercut that knocked the Rule Beast off balance. Then Voltron jumps up and comes down hard on it with both arms. The Rule Beast, blocking Voltron with his left arm, calls his energy ball back, and it hits Voltron, knocking him down face first. Then it sends another ball at Voltron, who's able to barely get out of the way in time. Keith says, "I thought Voltron was the most powerful weapon in the universe." Hunk says, "Yeah, so how is this monster kicking our butts?" Well, Voltron avoids the ball again and throws himself on the beast like a tired fighter in the ring. The Rope Beast throws Voltron down, who lands between a couple of hills really close to the Erusian village. Shiro says, "Oh no, the village. We have to protect those people."
Right.
So, as a blast from the ball hits them, all five pilots struggle to keep Voltron from hitting the ground, because if they did, bye-bye village.
Yeah, the village sandwich.
They fire the thrusters and barely stay above the ground, nearly, you know, before they destroyed the village. Shiro says, "That was close." Then Voltron flies past the Rope Beast in the opposite direction to draw it away from the village. Pidge says, "We got him away from the Erusians, but we can't take him down." Lance says, "I got it. I'm going to power kick that orb thing." Keith says, "No, the last time you did a kick, we fell." Lance says, "Stop living in the past."
Even though it's only a day or two ago.
I know. It just happened. Well, as the Rope Beast throws the orb again, Voltron pulls up and drives his right leg forward for a power kick as Lance yells. However, the orb misses the leg, hitting Voltron in the head, knocking him for a loop, and Voltron lands with a loud thud on his side.
Oops.
Oops. As Voltron struggles to get up, Shiro says, "Pidge, fire lasers now." Pidge says, "Got it, fire," but ends up turning on the shield and says, "Oops," and starts hitting buttons frantically.
And isn't that shield awesome?
Yeah, but it wasn't what they wanted at the time.
Right, but the visual is still cool. The two enormous wings of the Black Lion popping off, merging together, and then somehow getting in the robot's hands. That's pretty cool. Anyway.
Yeah, and you know, everybody was thinking that those wings probably just were for, I don't know, flight and maneuverability or something like that, but they have a purpose.
Woo-hoo.
Well, Shiro yells, "No, lasers, lasers!" And Voltron gets knocked back again and again. Hunk says, "Every time we focus on that orb, we're blindsided by the monster. And every time we focus on the monster, the orb hits us." This reminds me of the episode on Voltron Force where it was that little eye.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was so fast and everything that it could actually keep them from forming Voltron.
Yeah.
Lance says, "Then what do we do?" Hunk says, "Orb!" Voltron gets hit again. Keith says, Shiro, we gotta move. Shiro, are you there? Shiro. Well, as the Robeast rolls back the orb again, Shiro has a flashback of his time fighting in the ring against the same beast from before. He was hiding behind columns in the stadium to keep from getting hit by the orb. The sound of the orb reminds him who the monster is. Shiro says, that sound. I recognize this monster from my time in Zarkon's prison. I know how to beat him.
Do you remember from the flashback, did Shiro have his cybernetic arm yet or not?
Well, I did notice that he didn't have the white tuft of hair.
Okay.
But I didn't notice about the arm.
Yeah.
I don't think he had it. I don't think he had the arm or the tuft of hair yet.
So maybe they did whatever they did to him after he was, you know, given the title of champion.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
Okay.
He says, I know how to beat him. As the Robeast lunges forward toward Voltron, Voltron darts out of the way at the last second, and the Robeast plows into the hill behind him. Shiro tells the others, listen, there's a loud sound when the orb returns to the base of the weapon, and every third time, that orb needs to charge up. That is this monster's weakest point. That's when we strike. Hunk asks, okay, so what do we do in the meantime? Shiro says, defense. The Robeast flings the orb, and Shiro says, Pidge, we need that shield. The shield comes up, and they block the orb. We see another flashback of Shiro fighting the monster. Now, as we're doing this fighting with the monster during this whole time, mm-hmm. It goes back and forth between the first time he fought him and now, which is pretty cool. I mean, it keeps on doing that as we go along here.
Yeah, I like the editing here.
Yeah, it's really, really good job.
Yep.
Now in the present, Shiro says, that's one, two more to go. The Robeast fires again. And this time the orb hits the shield even harder, knocking Voltron back, but still standing up. Hunk says, we can't take much more. As the Robeast throws the third one, Shiro says, last one, everyone brace for impact. The blast blows apart the shield and knocks Voltron to one knee.
Yep. I love the whole, we can't take much more, and, you know, all the doom and gloom calls remind me of Star Trek when the Enterprise gets hit with a Klingon disruptor ray or something, and Captain, the shields can't take any more, and of course they do.
Right. So Shiro yells, now! They send a blast from Red Lion's mouth, and it's a direct hit on the Robeast. After he's knocked down, though, he's able to get back up on his feet again. Pidge says, it didn't work. Lance says, so now what? The Robeast hits them again. You see Shiro fall in the gladiator ring. Shiro remembers he was holding something. He says, when I attacked him before, I had a sword. Hunk yells, orb, orb, and they get hit. Pidge says, we can't take another shot like that. All of a sudden, Keith hears his lion, and a new console rises up out of the old one in front of him. Keith tells the others, wait a second, guys, I think my lion's telling me what to do. Lance yells, whatever it is, hurry up and do it. He's about to fire his third shot. Voltron gets hit and flipped over on its back on the ground. Then the Robeast charges Voltron, jumps up to give the final blow, and the animation changes.
Yes, it does. Instead of the full color traditional drawing, Keith, it's sort of a line art thing where it's a white background with just the outlines of the character.
Right. The animation for Keith changed to what looks like a cool anime drawing with only outlines in red and white.
Yep.
Yeah. And Keith yells and slams his Bayard into the new console and twists it. Voltron's hands come together and form a giant sword, which slices through the Robeast, and the Robeast explodes behind Voltron's follow-through stance.
I get the feeling we've seen that visual somewhere before, but I can't put a finger on it.
Yeah. Well, after that, Voltron swings the sword like a swashbuckler. The whole team yells, yeah, we did it! Hunk asks Keith, how did you do that? Keith looks at his Bayard, twists it, and pulls it out of the console. And he says, whoa. And he chuckles and says, thanks, Red.
And I gotta say, again, this is something that so far is unique to Keith. You know, Shiro is the leader, and all these characters have their own unique slant. But Keith has quietly had some unique traits of his own in terms of a link with the Lions. You know, I mentioned this before. In the first episode, he had an inkling that there was something to this whole Lion thing well before he ever encountered the Lion that would be his, you know, back on Earth with the cabin. And here, he is the first pilot to unlock, to make his Bayard, basically his Bayard weapon, the sword, also Voltron's weapon. And this suggests that there may be more to this link between Keith and Red than there is with the other pilots, perhaps.
Right. And his Bayard weapon was his sword, so...
Right, yep.
If Hunk's Bayard weapon is the gun, that becomes the shoulder gun on Voltron then, right?
Right.
Pidge's Bayard is like the electronic zapper?
Yeah. And of course, the little grappling hook thing, too.
Yeah. Boy, that'll lead to some interesting things, won't it?
Yeah. Yes, it will. So it seems cool. Yes, indeed. It looks like, yeah, the Bayard weapon becomes Voltron's weapon. Pretty neat.
And that also reminded me of when they had the Voltcoms in Voltron Force, and they plugged into their Lions and were able to get them to have the same powers.
Yeah. Neat stuff. Love it.
On the other side of the universe, Hagar can feel what happened with her Robeast. She screams out, no! But it was much better than what Darth Vader had done when Darth Vader yelled no.
I know. I mean, I... no!
Okay. She tells Zarkon, I'll make another, more powerful. Zarkon tells her, that won't be necessary. Sendak is still alive on Arrhys. I've given him instructions for how to proceed. Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it? Everybody forgot about Sendak.
Oh, yeah, that one guy, yes.
Remember how we had said at the end of The Rise of Voltron? How right. We thought that him and his first in command had run back from the bridge, back into the back of the ship, and it looked like they were able to escape on another ship?
Yep, I guess they had.
I guess they had. So, Hagar asks, can he be trusted? Zarkon says, I trained him and he has his mission. He fights in the name of Galra. Only success or death will stop him. So on Arrhys, we see Sendak and his second in command in the foreground moving some supplies to an area above the Arusian village. Sendak tells him, Zarkon has challenged us to rise from the mud and prove our worth. We will not let him down. His second in command says, sir, how are we going to take the castle with just the two of us and five damaged sentries? Sendak replies, by exploiting our enemy's weaknesses. What weaknesses? Sendak says, the worst weakness of all. They value the lives of others.
Yeah, we get the feeling that basically Sendak and his cohorts have been watching this combat, this battle between Voltron and that giant thing this entire time, maybe.
And even probably the Dance of Apology and all those other things, too, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
As he says that, we see them looking at the Arusian villagers, who are completely unaware that Galra soldiers are watching them. On the castle ship, the freed prisoners are taking a separate ship home. Lance tells them, good luck out there. Their usual spokesperson says, thank you all for everything. We never dreamed we'd see our families again, but you gave us hope. You gave the universe hope. As their ship leaves, we see Pidge and the mice sitting outside the castle, and there's like a sunset going on around them. Shiro walks up to him and says, Pidge, there you are. Pitch says, Oh, why would you hurt my brother? You were friends. Shiro says, I did it to save him. Pitch replies, what? Shiro says, my memory of the event came back when we were fighting the monster. Your dad was being sent off with the weaker prisoners to a work camp. Meanwhile, Matt and I were forced to fight in the gladiator arena. Matt was going to fight first, but he was scared. We all were. So we're back to the flashback now here.
Right.
We see them lined up at the arena like before. This time we hear Matt speak. Matt says, "I'm not going to make it. I'll never see my family again." Shiro tells Matt, "You can do this." Matt gasps as the sentry points his sword at him. Shiro just goes berserk and yells as he pushes Matt back. He grabs the sword from the sentry. He screams to the others, "This is my fight." He swings the sword and it hits Matt on his leg. Matt falls down in pain. Shiro comes down on top of him and yells, "I want blood." Matt is looking at him in horror. Before he gets pulled off Matt, he tells Matt, "Take care of your father."
I just love this scene. It's very powerful.
Yes, I totally agree with you. This is one of the most powerful scenes we've seen so far. Well, Pidge, realizing what Shiro had done, says, "You saved him. You attacked him so they would choose you instead." Pidge tears up and then hugs Shiro. He tells Shiro, "I'm so sorry I doubted you. Thank you. Thank you so much." Shiro says, "I can tell you really miss them. I know they miss you too. Your brother and father would be proud of you, Katie." Pidge gasps as the mice sit on her shoulder, hearing this as well. Shiro says, "Don't worry. Your secret's safe with me."
I love that ending too.
So, Katie Holt.
Yep. And I got to thinking about, as I rewatched this episode earlier today to kind of refresh my memory, I've been looking for Easter eggs here and there, and I didn't notice any overt Easter eggs in this episode, but I did come to think, I've been wondering if there will ever be any Easter eggs to Vehicle Voltron. And, Pidge in the original 80s series has the brother named Chip. As we are going to learn, we don't even need to talk about the future episode, Matt Holt, Katie's older brother, is on a mission with Matt and Katie's father. Matt is in many ways, by being on the same mission that his father is, a chip off the old block. I know it's a stretch, but you know.
Well, just the mere fact that they're taking off in the castle ship, and the castle ship reminds us of the ship from Vehicle Voltron.
Yeah, that, a little bit.
That all the vehicles, were able to form from that ship.
Yeah.
And form Vehicle Voltron. So, I mean, it's not too dissimilar.
Yeah, and I'm not one of those who thinks Vehicle Voltron must be or even should be or even ought to be necessarily in this series in any way. I really like this show as it is, and I want it to continue to evolve in its own unique way. But I do love tips of the hat, and I think my little chip thing here is a bit of a reach, but I'm going for it.
Well, I had forgotten to mention to Lauren and Joaquin that there was one episode where we saw the, I guess it was at the Galaxy Garrison, where mm-hmm. where we saw the names of the I guess the commanders, no, the faculty. Yeah, we saw the, right. the names of the faculty, and they were all like the writers of the show and right. and Joaquin Dos Santos as well.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, actually, this is not really an Easter egg, but kind of a fun visual goof. There is an episode in the 80s Voltron where the crew is in the Castle Alliance control room looking on the screen. And I was watching this. I wish I could remember the episode, but on the screen is something that looks really, really weird. And so I froze the video on the DVD on my computer, and it was actually the back of a box or a blister card of thumbtacks. I kid you not. It was on the computer screen. It was meant to look like a technical diagram, but it was directions on how to use thumbtacks.
Wow.
Yeah, fun stuff. So You know, not exactly an Easter egg, because I don't know why you'd want to refer to thumbtacks, but I love looking for fun visual gags and things like that. Star Trek's full of that sort of stuff. A lot of shows have that, and I do like the little tip of the hat in the show to the show's writers and producers. Fun stuff.
Well, we only have to watch it probably 100 more times before we get the same types of feelings as we did with Star Wars, right?
Yes, that's right. Do you feel up to the challenge, Mark?
Yeah, of course.
I do, too.
I mean, I could watch these shows back to back to back every day and still not get tired of it.
Yeah, I agree. I liked this show from moment one, but I think the moment that won me over to this series is near the end of the first episode when they're trying to form Voltron and Hunk just out of nowhere rams the Yellow Lion into Red Lion and yells, "Combine!" And I think for whatever reason, that moment made me think, I really, really like these characters.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I obviously liked that too. I liked when Hunk was on top of the cheerleader pyramid and said, I seem to recall I was the head, wasn't I? But the way he says it is different than the way Lance would say it, you know?
Sure.
You know, he's a lot more modest than Lance is.
Right. Yes.
You know, he would never flaunt his strength or his, you know, his engineering ability or anything like that. But Lance would.
Yes, he would even flaunt abilities he doesn't have, such as the ability to kick.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was pretty cool. And you know, it was great having Lauren and Joaquin there to talk to us before this episode review.
Yeah, what a lot of fun.
Yeah, so I'm really having a blast here, dude, doing all these podcast episodes where we get to talk to the actual people involved with the show.
Yeah. And just talking about the show is in and of itself is fun. But yes, talking with the people who make it, yes, it's a total blast.
Yeah. So I'm kind of glad that there's a little bit of a gap between season one and season two, because it gives us a chance to catch up with all the people involved with the show.
Yeah. By the time we get down to the interns and the gophers on the series, maybe we'll have season two.
I don't know if we'll get that far. We're comprehensive, but not that comprehensive.
That's true. That's true.
So moving forward now, I just want to give everybody a reminder that we will have Kimberly Brooks, who plays Princess Allura in Voltron Legendary Defender, on next week's podcast.
Wonderful.
The interview has already been recorded, and we have already had many fans send in their questions. So thank you for showing your love for Kimberly Brooks and, of course, Allura, who is just amazing on this show.
Yes, yes, yes.
And thank you to Lauren and Joaquin once again for joining us this week. We will be getting more interviews, we promise, after I get back from San Diego Comic-Con.
Awesome stuff.
Where I hope to have many other cool Voltron connections as well.
Awesome, awesome.
So we'll have to find out when we see you all next time on...
Let's Voltron!